Rise up!
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's episode 270. I know it's been 4 weeks, it's been almost a month, but there hasn't been much going on, so we apologize for the delay, but we do have some content for you in this summer of the summer of 2020, which is very, very difficult. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, and my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And it's been long enough, Seth, that we have a number of things to talk about. We could have had some smaller shows, but now that the off season is officially over, the Cardinals wrapped things up 2 weeks ago with their veterans. The entire NFL's virtual off season is on their summer break before training camps, and now we are awaiting news for training camps and how that's going to work and fans, no fans, how many fans, and then the real trickiness begins. Seth, how have you been for the last month? I know we haven't had much to talk about Cardinals, but other than that, what's been your take on everything that's been going on in the last month? Because it has been a weird month, and we know, guys, everyone, this is a weird year. It was a weird June. We're just hoping that football comes back, whether we can go to those games or not, but at least we can have that. That's what I'm hoping for, and that everything else will improve, because we know people are hurting right now for a number of reasons. There's whether it's health, whether it's money, whether it's society. It's a rough time out there.
Yeah, it's been rough, and I mean, that's the hard part, I think, more than anything, is just finding a way to manage through this. And it's not, you know, it's definitely not fun, but it's something that we're trying to figure out, you know, as a community, and something hopefully we will be able to figure out and continue to at least enjoy football with, because like you said, that's what this is kind of about. And we just want to be able to watch football and enjoy football. That's the goal right now. Hopefully it'll work itself out, because, you know, as of now, it does not seem like it.
It seems weird. We want to be healthy. We want to be able to go to our jobs and take care of our families. And we do want football, in part because, in addition to the football side that we all love seeing the Cardinals play, we're excited to see what the Cardinals have in store for this coming season. But the players, staff, workers, everyone related to this, that is also their work and their job. So in this episode 270, we're gonna talk about a few off-season things. We're gonna kick things off talking about this exact thing, the start of the season, what concerns are, what's been in the news in the league. Kyler Murray had some players out working out in Dallas. The social message and the idea of kneeling, Kyler Murray talked about that and other players. Mason Cole spoke to the media in the last couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about his progress and his opportunity. And then moving ahead, kind of the last part of the show, we will address what we think the offense is going to look like, if it's going to look any different than it did last season. So let's kick things off. What we know so far in terms of the beginning of the NFL season, there's reason to be positive, there's to be optimistic, there's reason to be concerned. What we know so far, the Hall of Fame game has been canceled, and the enshrinement ceremonies for this year have been postponed to next year. So next year they're going to have two enshrinement ceremonies, and no Steelers, Cowboys, but we have our first preseason game taken off the calendar. We know that the league is saying that training camps will begin on time. Okay? We don't know what that's going to look like yet, but that's been said is that camps will start on time, which means the Cardinals are scheduled July 28th to report to camp. We know that those camps will be held with the teams will not be able to go where they normally go. The Cardinals, the instruction is at their team facility or home stadium. That means the Cardinals are still free to hold camp at State Farm Stadium if they want. We know that season ticket holders have been advised, the teams and NFL teams have communicated. I'm sure this has gone throughout the league, but I know for a fact that the Cardinals season ticket holders and the LA Rams season ticket holders have all been advised by the franchises that there is a very low probability of having capacity stadiums this year. We also know through reports that have come out that NFL owners have announced that they are going to keep their for the first 6 to 8 rows, there will be no fans in the stadium, and they're going to tarp those off, sell them for local ads and sponsors, which will allow them to recoup some of the potentially lost revenue for lack of fans in the stadium, which revenue is important. It gets tied to the salary cap and all that. So, that's a lot going on, Seth. I was concerned initially with the Hall of Fame game cancellation, but then a little bit less concerned. What was when that announcement came through, did you worry more, or did you come across as much less concerned about the rest of the preseason camp and being ready for the start of the season?
It was one of those situations where it came through and you go, just where we're at, I think it just makes sense. I'm guessing, and again, this is a guess, that you're going to see these things kind of play out in about 4 to 6 week incremental decisions because, I mean, we'll look at it from a couple avenues. You know, obviously, this is an Arizona Cardinals podcast, so we'll go with the Arizona angle from, you know, starting with schools. You're a teacher. You know, I have 5 kids in schools. My dad is, you know, a administrator. So schools are, you know, kind of second nature to both of us. And we got the info for Chandler schools where we live. I think it was a week ago, it might have even been 2, that they had already pushed back school start date till August 5th, which would have been basically, 2 weeks out from
almost
the original?
I think it was a little more than a week than what was scheduled. And my district my kids in Gilbert weren't scheduled to go to start school anyway till August 5th. The Higley district where I work did not push forward their start date, but we know that the governor has announced that in-person classes won't begin till the middle of August. There's a whole lot up in the air as to whether districts will start their schools online the way they ended last year, but football makes it interesting.
Well, and when you do that, you know, and so kind of my point of that was that when you're talking about large strategical things like school is, like the NFL, you kind of play out 6 weeks, you know, 4 to 6 weeks ahead of time. So you say, we have so many moving parts, there's so many pieces. I mean, the NFL is, I don't think people comprehend the amount of people employed in the NFL that just aren't players and or coaches, but just other people that are doing things in terms of, you know, figuring out flights, hotel stays, things of that nature. You have, you know, huge, basically they're many, each one's a mini corporation. And so you can't make changes on the fly. It's just, I mean, it won't work. And so to get rid of the Hall of Fame game, which incidentally would have fallen right around when some Arizona school districts were going back to school, it just makes sense, because you look at it and you go, okay, well, if Arizona is pushing their start dates back for school already, and we're 4 weeks out, then the NFL saying, okay, a game that's 5 weeks out, we're just going to go ahead and cancel. Like, we'll scrap that right now and we'll focus on the next week, you know, the kind of second week in August, which would have been really week one of the preseason anyway, and go from there. And so if they're going to cancel, you know, week one of the preseason, true week one of the preseason, I assume we'll probably get that message or information at the beginning of next week. And so, you know, that's the thing, is the surprise of canceling the Hall of Fame game isn't there, but the surprise that they didn't maybe even go a little further with that and say, hey, you know, they've already discussed they're only going to do two preseason games, or that's what the discussion is. Let's just cancel the first 2 weeks, or, you know, or that Hall of Fame game in week one of the preseason, and let's focus on potentially getting started week two or week three. And because I think most teams are similar to the Cardinals in how their preseason games are scheduled, where they play, you know, a semi-meaningful home game and away game, and then they play a first or last home game as well. They don't, you know, they usually, you don't see teams get a second preseason game and a third preseason game at home. So when it comes to that, I think you're going to see it coming about 5+ weeks out, and we'll see how this all goes.
And yeah, I anticipate now when the Hall of Fame announcement made, I wrote almost immediately that Cardinals fans should get a little bit worried. Oh, then it was like 15 minutes later when the report came out that training camps are going to start on time. I'm not super concerned about the preseason. In terms of the money side for the league, the preseason is important because you get full stadiums, you're selling tickets at regular prices, and you're not having to pay game checks, like salary game checks, to players. The owners kind of like the preseason. But we're all kind of looking at that September 13th date. That's really, as long as we can get, whether we get one preseason game, two preseason games, fantastic. If we can manage to get to week one and actually get games started, obviously I think fans are probably not going to be in the picture, at least initially. But the news that training camp's going to start on time, according to the league, is positive for me. However, as we saw with baseball a little bit, the part that's going to be difficult is the push for the franchises, and then the Players Association pushing for protections for their players, for their health and safety, what all that entails. I'm hoping that means we will see an agreement or some talks. I think personally, I'm hoping it doesn't happen before the beginning of next week. I'm going to be completely offline at a family reunion, and I won't be able to write anything. So as long as they can wait till Monday of next week, and we can get some word that starting next week, I think is kind of the key week. The next week or the week after that is, I believe, are the critical weeks to get a plan in place so that training camp can start on time. We'll also have seen the first little bit of the return of professional sports with Major League Baseball and the NBA getting their players back together and working out, and kind of see some of the initial effects of whether COVID is going to be an issue within the locker rooms. And if everything goes smoothly, relatively smoothly, for baseball and for basketball, it should be a good sign for football and when training camps start. Training camps, it gets tricky with the locker room because of the expanded rosters. But you can separate, and the Cardinals can, you can do some separation to keep the groups too big. You can enforce certain sanitary things. You can keep the media away. You tier things. We've already seen that the NFL has some tiered access to limit the contact with the players and with other workers. So, I mean, I'm mildly optimistic that week one will happen. At minimum, it looks like, for me, with the NFL, as we talked about on a previous show, that there are some schedule contingencies. Even if we had to delay the season a month, the league set up the schedules so they could take like the first four games and tack them on to the end of the season. So basically pushing is, and as long as I think they have the Super Bowl, they could do that any of the weeks in February, to where if you needed to push things back to the start of October, you could still play a full 16 game season, you could still have the playoffs, and it would just, even if you needed to, you could just start everyone in week five and then take those weeks one through four and tack them into January. Not ideal, but it's something. But I'm mildly optimistic for a full NFL season.
Yeah, I don't think at this juncture we're going to be off even on the start. I think they'll shut down and – or they'll be on track to kind of get started on time. And if they have to, it'll cut down, like you said, the preseason game. So we'll see what happens and move forward. I think right now they're on the right track. But again, that's just because they're basically focusing on keeping things completely contained. And, you know, I have a friend that's a real big gambler. And so I know people, and we're not a gambling podcast by any means. But I will tell you that there is, you know, there is a reality to how important that portion of money and things are to things as well. Football is a much larger medium when it comes to gambling than baseball and even basketball and hockey. So when you are starting to talk about people's pocketbooks, they're going to kind of do what we see with the UFC, I'm guessing, and find a way to make things happen on a week-to-week basis instead of being like the other sports where they, you know, probably correctly just completely shut everything down until they could come up with something. The other difference is, and we talked about this a while ago, is that the NFL, it didn't happen during the NFL season. So the NFL's had basically 5 months to get their game plan together of how they were going to proceed with this, and they've never really shown any inkling that it's not going to happen.
Cut on next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to move on from the talk of the start of the season. Let's talk about the off-season workouts, the reunion, the connection of Kyler Murray and his teammates. That's cut on next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We've been waiting. Cardinals fans have been waiting all off-season. It seems like it's probably been about 6 weeks that we've been hearing that Kyler Murray and his offensive teammates soon would get together and do some workouts on the field. That finally did happen. Kyler Murray invited all 20 of his quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end teammates, paid for them to come out to Dallas, have some workouts for the first time. Now, there's a trend around the league. Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, there's a number of teams, quarterbacks, getting together with teammates to do some work on the field since there hasn't been any organized on-field work. However, the Players Association, Damar Smith, J.C. Treader, they're discouraging, heavily discouraging this sort of behavior. Talk about player safety, and perhaps the message that if they're out doing it on their own, that it sends a message to teams that they can be able to expect players to come and work out on the field. The balance, it's very, very tricky. Now, Kyler Murray, there's a number of ways we can go with this. One is the fact that despite the discouragement from the Players Association to have these on-field workouts, Cardinals did do it. Two, Kyler Murray arranged everything, brought everyone out to him, foot the bill, showing the leadership. And then three, they finally got some work out on the field, and we got to see a hype video of it. Now, take me through this, Seth. In your opinion, should they have done those workouts? Was it smart? And if not, what's smart, but was it needed?
I'm not going to pretend to know the ins and outs of the schedule and things that kind of went down, or whether or not they tested beforehand or after. But I would assume, and you know what that can do to people, I would assume that they took precautions and at least tested beforehand to make sure nobody was positive before they got together. That's, again, maybe me being cautiously optimistic and naive. But I think that's, you know, if they did that, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. We're honestly getting to a point where I don't think it's healthy or safe for people to not do anything. And so when you see these guys out there working out as a team, like I said, if precautions were taken, I think you can be okay with it. Unfortunately, we'll probably never get the truth behind that, because I don't think any of the players are going to come out and say, oh yeah, we didn't do anything. So like I said, let's just hope that they took the precautions that they should have and needed to, and that we're going to see a positive outcome from this, because there's a lot to build on from last year, and I think that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, I kind of wrote about it today, and I know you've written about it. Kyler Murray being the guy that kind of organized this whole thing, foot it, or, you know, he foot the bill for the whole thing. I think that tells us a lot about Kyler, the player. And, you know, I went back through a lot of scouting reports and looked at the fact that a lot of people question whether or not Kyler Murray was a quote-unquote leader and could command the huddle. I think what that workout shows us is that those questions are answered, at least in the idea of being a leader. I mean, you're talking about a guy who organized, assembled, planned, I mean, did basically everything on his own. I mean, I know he's got a team of people, but, you know, took care of everything on his own and set this up for his team that desperately needed this. And I just think that that speaks volumes to the type of player he is and that he's becoming. And so, you know, I truly don't have an issue with it, as long as, you know, the proper steps and precautions were taken, because, again, I don't think we can just completely shut down life and say, well, you can't do anything at all, because especially if you're going to go forward with an NFL season, I think it's kind of hypocritical to be like, well, you guys can practice when we say you can practice, but not before or after.
For me, being people, well, I know people who still have to go to work. Now, the NFL players are technically not at work yet and don't need to be at work. However, for me, I don't think that the risk for most of these players comes from what they do on the field. It's what they do in their downtime. If these professional football players, and these are young men, young rich men, young men who are in their early 20s, they have a lot of money, and most of those young men like to go out, especially the ones that don't have families. They like to go out and have a good time. For me, the concern is not about whether they'll be protected or safe with their workouts. The issue is then the downtime, and I think that what Kyler did, because he organized like the lodging, some of the activities, and if the players were responsible and they stuck together, then I think they're okay. And that's kind of the key for this NFL season about the players being safe. One is the player safety. Two is to protect their families, those who go home to someone or have a wife and kids or live with a mother or a father or things like that. It then becomes, what do they do when they're not doing football? For most of us, our jobs are probably fairly safe. And their job is probably, aside from the danger of football, in terms of that, they can be safe if they're not being dumb with other things and going to clubs or exposing themselves outside of work. So I'm pleased with this, and here's the thing, fans, as much as, and I'm sure there were many fans that were concerned for a long time that Kyler had not gotten together with his teammates until now, especially when we heard of all the other reports of other quarterbacks getting their teammates together. Matt Ryan has had it, and Tom Brady, Russell Wilson. For all the fans here to worry, well, is he not going to do that? And we heard the talk, and he finally got together. But then when we got it, we heard it, and his voice is coming, his leadership is coming, he has the respect of his teammates. They already respect the crap out of him for his play on the field last year and his progression, his development. I think we're seeing everything's okay. Kyler's a guy, he lives and breathes football, he said. He's responsible otherwise. He likes to stay at home, so he's not big to go out all that much. So it's good to see this, and as long as they, you know, weren't reckless outside of their workouts, that's the only part that I really worry about when it comes to players. I'm less concerned about like what happened in the NBA now that we have much more awareness where the players got their teammates infected. As if they're being responsible off the field and outside of the locker room, then things are going to be in place for the teams, and as long as they're following protocol, that they will be protected there.
Yeah, and that's all you can hope for. I mean, and nothing else really matters as long as, like you said, they're being protected and protecting themselves and, you know, their teammates. That's all you can do, and that includes, you know, that includes the social distancing, that includes, you know, like you said, not going out, kind of trying to be a good teammate, you know, like we've talked about, that this is a group that needs the work, one, but two, you know, they, like I said, they want to build on last year, especially the end of the season last year, where you were starting to see things come together. And, you know, I think this is a big step in the right direction. And, you know, hopefully it pays off in the long run more than anything.
Coming up next to the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web, we'll discuss a little bit about a topic that a lot of people hate discussing, and that's kneeling and the prevalence that could have on the Cardinals and the NFL next year. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Kneeling for the anthem was a discussion that we basically left alone here on this show. It was discussed ad nauseum by some fans. It was made a political statement. Colin Kaepernick essentially blackballed out of the league. But in light of things that are happening in society, there is going to be much more peaceful protest, much more kneeling, and one of those players will be leading the way in Kyler Murray. How surprised were you that a second-year player was willing to come out and not just say, hey, we'll discuss things at a team? He made it, no, I'm definitely kneeling.
You know, I'm not surprised again. I think Kyler is one of those guys that's very intelligent. I think he's very thoughtful. I don't think he does anything kind of, flying by the seat of his pants. Instead, I think he's a guy that has discussions with those around him. And you know, I know his dad's a huge influence in his life. His dad's obviously, African-American, and that I'm sure that was a conversation that they had together. Like, what do you, as, you know, my dad, as my mentor, you know, what would you expect of me? You know, what do I need to be doing? And I think that's the thoughtful and right way to go about things, is, you know, to seek advice and to listen. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that we don't hear enough about, are people, you know, just trying to get advice from others and listen to what they have to say. In the end, I think for me, there's a really easy fix to this whole kind of situation. It may not even be a popular one, but I think when you look at it and you just say, hey, the teams are going to stay in the locker room during the national anthem, that just kind of makes everything really easy, doesn't it? I mean, then you don't have to worry about who's standing, who's kneeling. Is there animosity between the teammates? I feel like if you just, I don't want to say avoid this situation, but if you just say, hey, we're just going to remove this from something. It was never anything that they really did until after 9/11. Then probably you could prevent what seems to be the kneeling aspect, not what the kneeling stands for, but the kneeling aspect of it, as a, I would say, 50-50 split on what's, at least in Arizona Cardinals fans, on what they perceive to be the right move to make here. You know, maybe that's, like I said, a cop-out, and possibly it could be, but I just think it's the easiest way to avoid a very nuanced situation in something that has a lot more weight than just message board fodder, so to speak, of how it ends up what it ends up devolving into so often.
I'm intrigued as to what it's going to look like, because when DJ Humphries, well, first Larry Fitzgerald was very diplomatic about it, said, "Yeah, there's a lot of time, we'll figure it out." DJ Humphries, hey, we're doing something, but it'll be as a team. Kyler came right out, so I'm kneeling. Kenyon Drake said, if he's kneeling, I'm kneeling. And really, really came out and said, hey, this is, if Murray's able to do that, because he even felt bad that back in 2016 when he was a rookie, he wanted to do it. And he had some teammates who were willing to do it, but didn't feel comfortable doing it if it wasn't a full team thing, and kind of regrets that. Whether or not you agree with the act of what it is, or even what it represents, I'm super intrigued with the change in the league, because the league wanted to put a kibosh on it. Even told us, hey, you can, you know, just not be out, not stay in the locker room. And it was made a, it made something else. Personally, I've had never had any problem with the kneeling itself, especially what it represents. I've never felt it was all that disrespectful. Kneeling is reverential. That's my opinion. And it's a way to, since the, if they're going to show, if this pans out, now here's the thing. If it's going to be with no fans in the stadium, the television could have made it a non-issue to begin with by not showing it. But that being said, it's interesting how things have changed so quickly and the power that players are getting to be able to speak out on social issues. Whether you agree with the issues or not, on the whole, I like to see power to the players, because too often the owners, the league, is able to quiet them. Now, I know that in many of our jobs, in many of the professions that we have, there are things that we should not say while on the job or do while on the job for social statements. I do like that players now have the power to make social, take social stands, whether or not to agree with them, because the truth is, it's better if our football players are more than just football players, and they can, and they can stand for things that are good and right, assuming they're good and right, to bring awareness to issues that affect a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's what we're seeing from Kyler and those guys that you talked about, is that that's their platform that they're using to do that with. And so that's, you know, like you said, one, that's their right, but two, it's their ability and they feel like their duty to do something. And so, you know, for that, I think you have to respect them and respect how that they view their, I don't say importance, but their ability to, like you said, speak out on something that they feel passionate about and that they feel like they should be involved with. And I think that's, you know, I think the 180 from the NFL is very interesting. I think that's the best way to put it. Politically speaking, you know, just say that it's interesting that they've kind of come full circle from what, 4 years ago, like you said, where it virtually got somebody blackballed from the league. And so when you look at it from that point of view, maybe it's a hollow gesture from the NFL, not from, you know, the players, but at the same time, I think you look at it and you go, okay, this is what they're doing. You know, I think we all look at it and accept is probably the best word to use in saying, like, accept as in, like, this is what's happening. So just be prepared and deal with the what's coming instead create another, you know, crap storm of getting upset over something that you knew was coming anyways.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about some football stuff. Next up, Mason Cole and his opportunity as starting center. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. There has really been one major change. There was one big addition in DeAndre Hopkins and on the offensive side of the ball. However, there's one change. A.Q. Shipley appears that the Cardinals are not particularly interested in bringing him back. He says he's probably not coming back to the Cardinals. Mason Cole now is the guy. He spoke to the media a week ago after it was last Monday, I think it was, And he was, they discussed with him kind of the, his role, and it is made very clear to him he's expected to start this year. Now, he started as a rookie, played every snap, and then was relegated to a kind of an Earl Watford role where he didn't really play much, but he got lots of love from his head coach, and Cliff Kingsbury called him perhaps the most valuable player on that offensive line. And then late in the year, Kingsbury was purposefully giving him reps at both guard positions and center, even when his veteran starters were healthy. They were a little banged up, but he was purposefully giving Cole playing time during games, preparing him for this year. Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury both call him a perfect fit in this offense. What do you think? Is Mason Cole ready? And what is your take on his sitting out last year?
You know, I think we're at the point where it becomes this need to figure out what you have in guys. I had no problem with A.Q. Shipley being the center last season. I think just from a standpoint of knowledge of the NFL, he was the right player. If I mean, we know what his physical limitations are. Nobody's ever going to mistake him for being the, you know, prototype build of center in the NFL. But I think the fact that Cliff saw enough in Mason and either vouched for him or said, hey, unless you can get, you know, player X, Y, or Z, no, none of these guys are going to be better than Cole coming in, that, you know, he's going to have a chance to succeed. And the other thing is, you have to eventually give these draft picks the chance to prove themselves on game day in some way. Now, I'm not saying that if a guy is terrible that you still put him out there, but if a guy is at least as good, if not slightly worse than maybe a veteran, especially an older veteran, in practice, there's always the chance that he's going to fail or not be as good as the player that you're replacing him, you know, with. However, there are such thing as guys that just don't practice well. There are guys that are gamers, and you won't ever really know what you have in a player until you give them a chance to fail on the field. And so I think from that point of view, it makes a lot of sense to give Mason Cole this opportunity because you're still within a window that you can afford to go sign a veteran center in 2021 if you don't like what you see from Cole, where you've got, you know, virtually 3 years left of Kyler Murray at a semi-cost-controlled rate before you're going to have to make him a part owner of the franchise. So you can go in and get a 2 or 3 year higher-end center if need be. And hopefully Mason Cole's success gives you two starters from, you know, a draft class that's rapidly approaching bad in that 2018 draft class. I mean, Josh Rosen's already gone, we know that, but the only players remaining are Christian Kirk, Mason Cole, and Chase Edmonds. And while we both are very high on Chase Edmonds, I would venture to say we don't see him as much more than a, you know, kind of backup change of pace guy, which is fine for the fourth round. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, unless Kirk becomes a viable number two receiver or Mason Cole becomes an entrenched starter at center, I mean, you're talking about a really bad draft. And so I think at giving Cole the shot, you're at least seeing, hey, what are we going to get salvage out of this 2018 draft at this point? Because when you look back 2016, 17, and 18, if it only yields you a Buda Baker and a Christian Kirk, then, yeah, that was a really, really bad time to be drafting.
What I like, honestly, and it's – I'll give you this little tidbit that I picked out of the interview, and I tweeted about it after I listened to it, not a few hours after the fact. I didn't get to listen to the press conference live or the Zoom conference live this time, as I have other ones. But and it was when Mason said that Sean Coogler had called him personally and told him this offseason that they're expecting him to be the guy. That's not basically handing the job, but they don't want. They plan on him being the starter, and it kind of lays down the foundation for what they expect out of him. He also said that he got a call last offseason that he wasn't going to be the starter. And what's interesting to me about that is the fact that we were told all offseason from Cliff Kingsbury how close AQ, and I will tell you from what I saw, from my observations and practice in the locker room, the job was always going to be AQ's, down to the way they had the lockers configured in the locker room. It was always going to be AQ's job if he was healthy enough to do it. But all we heard all offseason from Cliff Kingsbury, they were splitting reps, and I think it was more about, and I think it was mostly about limiting AQ's practice reps in the off season and the training camp and the preseason, where they, and Cliff said it took him to the very last day to decide who the starting center was, and it was really, really close. That says a lot about Cliff Kingsbury, the coach, is to, as they gave Cole opportunities to compete, although the conversation was, we're going to let you compete, but AQ's the starter unless you are way better. And the truth is, AQ being the starter was probably the smart play in a new offense with a rookie quarterback. AQ is capable, he's smart, and he's a leader. He was the leader of that line. Mason got the respect of his coach. He got the respect of his teammates. And now he has the honestly, with how he played every snap as a rookie, that also earned him the respect of his teammates as well. And so now he's in a good position, and it's very possible that he was AQ's equal, maybe even a little bit better, equipped to be the center. But the fact that AQ had been in the league longer, probably picked up the offense more quickly, and could help Kyler more than Mason could, was probably the difference. And that's the one thing, is that the one tidbit that I got out of that is that the competition between AQ and Mason was real. It was real. There was nothing unreal about that competition. But for those who felt that it was a dogfight down to the end, like Cliff made it sound like, AQ was always going to have that job. And Mason all but admitted that in that conversation.
And that's a big thing when it comes to confidence, too. I mean, that's something that we can't let get lost, is that the Cardinals need Mason to be confident coming in as well. And so whether these are true or not, I think matters less than anything else, because they need him to believe that he was as good, or he was better than AQ Shipley. And it was simply an experience. And like you said, you're talking about a rookie quarterback with a rookie head coach, and maybe, you know, a veteran center was the way to go at that juncture. And, you know, it worked to a, you know, I think we would all agree a certain degree, and now Mason's a little better off for it, and the Cardinals are a little better off for it, and we'll see how that plays out from there.
And he becomes the one real change on that offensive line, because DJ Humphries is back, Justin Pugh is back, J.R. Sweezy's back, and there'll be a competition at right tackle. It looks like Marcus Gilbert will enter as the starter, kind of the... I think Marcus Gilbert will get the AQ Shipley treatment in terms of the job, and that Justin Murray and Josh Jones will have their opportunities to compete. But Marcus Gilbert will be the starter unless something happens. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk, and then we're going to wrap it up with our final segment talking about, well, let's talk about the offense. The personnel is mostly the same. DeAndre Hopkins, Mason Cole, Marcus Gilbert, the right tackle position could look different, but it might be Justin Murray. We'll see. How different is the offense going to look this year? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. What can we expect from this offense this year? Because now we know they still use 10 personnel far more than any other team in the NFL. That said, where they started to kind of make their money, or whatever cliche you want to use, offensively, was building it around the run game with Kenyon Drake. And they did use quite a bit of two tight ends in the second half of the season. That they didn't get rid of their four wide. They didn't get rid of completely their three wide. But they ran a lot of more two tight end sets than you probably would have expected. And then Cliff was getting cute with his two running backs in the backfield and his three running backs in the backfield to, you know, to kind of give David Johnson and Chase Edmonds some love. Do you expect the offense to look much different this year? I think things evolve, but I anticipate something a little different because they have more pieces now. You added the DeAndre Hopkins, so you've now got your top three receivers you're really comfortable with. Kenyon Drake is a great fit, better fit for the offense than David Johnson was from what we saw. You get basically the same offensive line back. You're in year two. What do you expect to be different?
I don't expect a ton, especially early, to be different, except maybe you'll see a slight change in how they vary their run calls. I think you're going to see a little more in terms of the read option, where Kyler gets a little more comfortable throwing the ball off reads. And I think you're going to see a little more, like you said, you're going to see a little diversity in their sets. Maybe you'll see three wide receivers, two backs. You'll see two tight ends, two wide receivers, one back. You'll see two backs, tight end and two wide receivers. I think when you have kind of the chess pieces that Cliff has, that you have to take advantage of them and be multiple and have a variety of options to work through. But I think from the play calling standpoint, is you're just using different personnel groupings to run similar play calls. I mean, Cliff's one of the more innovative offensive minds in the NFL, and his running game scheme is maybe top three in the NFL, along with the Ravens and the 49ers. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I think that you find that changes in terms of maybe personnel groupings will be bigger. I think changes in maybe play flow will be different, but I don't think you're going to see a ton of changes in terms of what they're trying to do, because I think Cliff is very comfortable in where he was at the end of last year, and going to keep he's going to try to keep and build on that ideal from last season.
I agree. And I think the one main thing that's going to be different now, everyone talked about 10 personnel. Like, media members who probably weren't super well-versed about 10 personnel talked about 10 personnel up the wazoo at the start of last year. And we know the Cardinals got behind early, and they had the way their offense runs, their passing game, if they are in passing downs, they run four receivers. It's just the way that it is. There's no reason to put a tight end out, line up a tight end if they need five guys running routes. It just didn't make sense. That said, I think the major difference this year, and there were limits to the passing game last year. I expect the running game will be kind of and because I think they're going to be just be better executing the passing game, and that'll just make the offense look different. It'll look different because they'll be executing the passing game much better. They will a lot. The short passing game is a staple in what the Kingsbury offense is, but with the players that they have, with the addition of DeAndre Hopkins and the development of the offensive lineman Kyler Murray being able to read defenses better, the plays down the field will now open up. And once that happens, that's going to open up the passing game, which can open up the offense completely. There were a lot of three and outs last year still at the beginning of the year, or a lot of stalled drives. The fact is, they never got the offense exactly where they wanted it to be because the passing game never completely opened up. And I think that will happen this year. What we should see, and if I think it'll be almost a disappointment if it's not that way, they should be a top 10 offense this year. I think they should be a top 10 offense this year based on personnel, familiarity, talent, and that Kenyon Drake can still have a very good year. I think 1,100 to 1,200 yards or somewhere between 1,100 and the high 1,200 yards is reason. It's almost like he should get that if he's healthy all year because the running game is they have a very easy job running the ball when you can't stack the box. You're going to have a better, you have Kyle Murray reading defenses better. You've got DeAndre Hopkins. They're just receiving core is just much more talented. I'm super excited what this offense has to offer. And I just hope that the beginning of the year that they can not be rusty from the lack of an offseason on the field.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of that from everybody. And so that's the one thing that you have to be comfortable with is that there is going to be some continuity outside of DeAndre Hopkins and to a smaller degree, Mason Cole. But I mean, Cole's been in the offense, versed in the offense, given snaps in the offense, snapped the ball in the offense. And so it's really, I mean, really we're only talking about in terms of key cogs in the offense, we're only talking about DeAndre Hopkins. And I mean, that's a guy I'm going to bet on 10 times out of 10 in terms of knowing what he's doing and doing it well, because he's kind of a freak of nature.
I mean, right. Then that's the fact of the matter. It's like when you add that, you made an obvious upgrade in the receiver, a clear upgrade by adding DeAndre Hopkins. From what we saw between last year, it's not an upgrade on the end of last year, but it's an upgrade definitely of the beginning of last year when you're going from David Johnson to Kenyon Drake. And then you add Marcus Gilbert coming back, or continuity on the offensive line, and the improvement for Kyler Murray. It's basically, you say, you've got an improved receiving core. You have an improved running back room. You've got an improved Kyler Murray, and you have a consistent offensive line. This should be super exciting. Now, you cross your fingers that the injury bug doesn't hit, but Cliff Kingsbury used a bunch of formations, used a lot of motion, substituted players all the time. I just think this year we're going to see much better execution, especially in the passing game.
Yeah, and I would hope so from the offensive line standpoint. I would hope so from Kyler's standpoint. And I will hope so from the standpoint of the wide receivers, the fact that they've upgraded the talent. When you're talking about the talent, and people misunderstood this a lot, when you're talking about the talent and you're saying that now you've pushed everybody down a rung already, or pushed down everybody a rung in their duties on offense, you're talking about, Larry Fitzgerald being your de facto one, Christian Kirk being your de facto two, and then Demir Byrd ended up being your number three. So now, you have DeAndre Hopkins, who is, a true alpha number one. I mean, we're talking Prime Fitz type of ability. And now you say, okay, well, that should allow Christian Kirk to thrive as a true number two, with Larry being kind of the slot underneath guy that's going to be the security blanket in the offense. And that just, I mean, that alone should improve the efficiency of the passing game. I would think it would have to.
Right. It just makes sense. And then, you know, whether it's Andy Isabella, whether it's Hakeem Butler on the other side, you don't, like, Isabella doesn't even have to be a slot guy. Like, he never really, he didn't really do it much in college. And so when they tried to do it last year, he might not end up being a slot guy for them if he can play outside. Yeah, I'm super excited. I'm super excited. And it's been tempered because of everything that's been going on the offseason. I just want to see it happen because I think this offense is going to be really, really good. It's just a matter of if they can execute in the red zone, one, and two, if the defense improves enough to not be terrible. And then when it comes to that, the Cardinals should be fun. They should at least be an okay team, a competitive team that's exciting to watch, and I can't wait. And with that, we will wrap up this show. Episode 269, now in the books. We will be back, I think, in 2 weeks. Maybe we'll have some news about training camp, but we can probably talk about some offseason rankings, some training camp preview. That's coming up next in the next couple of weeks. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Go Cardinals. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.